Welcome in on this Monday morning. It is the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm Ryan Porth in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, alongside Marquise Munson, who is behind the glass. Chase McCabe is not present on the program this morning because, well, he is on his way to Bridgestone Arena along with Darren McFarland to host the show today from 10 to 2 from the radio booth inside Bridgestone Arena. They'll be socially distanced, but they will be in the arena because...
Yeah, what's going on?
Today is the start of Phase 3 for the NHL's return, which means full team training camps, and that will start at noon today with the Predators hitting the ice for the first time since March 10th. March 10th.
Yeah, that's a...
4 months ago.
Yeah, for those
Friday.
Who don't know, that's 4 months ago.
And it felt like 4 years through those 4 months with everything that we've been through as a country and as a world. But yes, the Preds will be hitting the ice today, and Darren and Chase will be broadcasting live from the radio booth upstairs in the press box, watching with a bird's eye view. So it should be a lot of fun to hear their perspective once the Preds hit the ice and what all is going on with practice. I don't know if they'll have anything truly intense today with practice. First day after a long hiatus, so I would expect them to ease into things as the week goes along. But look, they only have a couple weeks before they go to Edmonton. They'll go to Edmonton on July 26th, I believe, and then the first game against Arizona scheduled for Sunday, August 2nd. So, especially with John Hines, this is the first real training camp that John Hines has with this team since he took over in January. So, they don't have a lot of time to get up to speed, even though they would likely, I would expect them to ease back into things starting today at noon when they hit the ice at Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah, see, it's a lot easier when you play in the NBA because you can always – a lot of players have courts at their house and they can jack up shots and make sure their shot's not rusty. Also, they got a scrimmage for a lot of teams. You know, even in MLB, we see there's a scrimmage between, you know, the Marlins and the Braves. So – and there's all these scrimmages going on to get you in game shape. Like, there's not a lot of, you know, available rinks and homes. I have not. Now, look, if you got a baller crib like that and you got an ice rink in your crib, hey, by all means, man, live it up. That's awesome. But, you know, and that's the difficulty of, you know, getting back on the ice. You know, roller skating is a possibility, but it's not the same as being on an ice rink.
Well,
so,
I have a buddy that lives in South Nashville. And a couple months ago, probably in April or May, I got a text from him on a Sunday morning, or maybe it was a Saturday morning, saying that he saw Nick Bonino rollerblading with his kid and just playing some street hockey out where he was walking around in South Nashville. So, you know, there was an Instagram video of Matthias Ekholm back in March or April of him rollerblading through his neighborhood here in Nashville. So you would think that all the players have done something of that ilk here, you know, leading up to them returning or being able to return to the ice in the different cities here in the last month, but nothing like what we're going to see today.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Even if it's not an intense practice, it is still a practice with all the main players participating.
Which it shouldn't be an intense practice, because I think, and you know, the Lakers have this issue now because Rondo's hurt and
right.
He, you know, hurt his thumb. He'll be out to, you know, 6 to 8 weeks now. And I think when you rush guys back too soon, when they haven't been, you know, I'm not saying none of them has been conditioning, but I mean, you've been at home for 4 months. So, you know, how much can you do? You're limited to what you can do. I've been doing resistant bands workouts for 3 months now, which that's pretty much the only thing I can do because I can't buy weights. So I have to do resistant band stuff. So you always have to make adjustments when it comes to your physical attributes. And so you don't want to rush them back too soon. You know, I think first couple of days will be, you know, light ice stuff and obviously getting them back out there and working on like small things, not really major, you know, 3-on-3s or whatever. I think they'll just kind of keep it light today for the first couple of days, you know, just to get them back going on the ice.
Well, and you see it in the NFL all the time. First week of training camp, hamstring injuries all the time.
Yes.
There's always a Titans receiver or cornerback or multiple that get hamstring injuries every single training camp. And when you look at the Nashville Predators or any NHL team coming back right now in camp, the margin for error when it comes to injuries in the next few weeks is very small, because you don't want to go into a best of five qualifying round where it's essentially the playoffs right off the hop, where you're down two or three players because you tried to intensify the practices too soon. They ended up injuring their groin and then, or having a lower body injury or whatever, and then you can't have them at full speed come August 2nd. Like, you just don't want that to happen.
No, absolutely. And that's the same reason why I'm a component of at least having one preseason game in the NFL, because of that reason right there alone. And I know some guys say, well, you don't need a preseason game. You know, you can just go straight to it. You know, guys, they're professionals. They work out all the time. But it's still like you want to be able to get in in-game shape. There's a difference between, like, if I go out and play a pickup basketball game and, you know, I haven't played basketball in 2 months. It's a lot different than, you know, competing in a whole entire 3-4 month return to play period where you're going to have to constantly play games over, you know, back to back to back. And it's a lot different for me just going out and playing a Sunday pickup game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why you have to have these guys. Like, I don't know if the NHL plans on having some full team scrimmages later down the line. They haven't said anything about that just yet. So, you know, maybe that's the plan in order to get these guys back into in-game shape. I know the NBA's doing it. You know, I know Major League Baseball's doing it as well. So we'll see if they can get in some in-game shape before hitting back on the ice on August.
I would expect them, once they get to the hub cities, to at least play one exhibition game. Whether that's Preds Coyotes in an exhibition game, or maybe the Predators face the Oilers in an exhibition game and the Coyotes face, say, the Canucks or something like that, where two different teams that aren't playing each other in the qualifying round get to knock off the rust in a 60-minute game. And look, a lot of storylines that are going to be worked out during Preds training camp. Pecorine, UC Saros, which goalie are you going with in game one against the Coyotes? Training camp is going to play a huge role in John Hines making that decision who starts between the pipes for the Preds come August 2nd. And in an exhibition game, I don't know how much you can really take from that, especially if you're going to give Pecorine 30 minutes and UC Saros 30 minutes. I think you're going to have to go off your gut, off of what you see in training camp, if you're John Hines. Again, training camp starts today with the players hitting the ice at noon. Darren Donick and Chase coming up at the top of the hour. We'll be broadcasting live from the radio booth in Bridgestone Arena. And the NHL announced Friday evening, which I don't know why they waited until Friday at 6 o'clock Central Time to put this news out. I don't know why they would dump this fantastic news and just put it out at 6 o'clock on a Friday. But that's neither here nor there. They will have, the qualifying round start August 1st. They came out with the graphic of showing all the different qualifying round series and the round robin games between the top four seeds in each conference, where there's going to be upwards of five games per day for at least the first week, and maybe for those 10 days. It's going to be hockey heaven with games all day long, starting at 11 a.m. Central, going until probably about midnight Central, with it being a five-game header. What would you call that? It's more than a quadruple header. I mean, I don't even know what you would call that.
I call that NCAA tournament-esque.
Yes.
Like, that's what I think it is. When you're getting five, six games a day, like, that's NCAA-esque.
August Madness doesn't quite have the same ring to it.
Yeah, it doesn't.
We need to come up with a different alliteration. But the point is, there's going to be a ton of hockey in a short amount of time. The Preds will face the Arizona Coyotes in Game 1 on August 2nd, Game 2 August 4th, Game 3 August 5th. And then, if necessary, games 4 and 5 would be August 7th and 9th. It's a lot of hockey in a short amount of time for all of these series starting on August 1st. Should be a ton of fun. As a hockey fan, I was so jacked up when that announcement came out Friday night. Just knowing that all I want is for these NHL teams to get to the Hub Cities healthy. Because if they can get to the Hub Cities healthy and do all the protocols correctly, we are going to have hockey in Edmonton and in Toronto, in the two hub cities, and it is going to be phenomenal. And it's going to be great for the NHL because, look, not only did they come out with the qualifying round and the playoff schedule Friday night with the NHL and the NHLPA fully 100% agreeing to everything with the return to play plan. They also announced they will have labor peace through 2026. That is a huge deal for the National Hockey League, because this is a league in the last two decades that has had a pair of lockouts that have put a dent into their image nationally. And the fact that you have Major League Baseball arguing over money, now you have the National Football League arguing over money, and as the NHL, they were the first of the Big Four to put out their plan back in late May. They said this is what it's going to look like, and then they fully agree to it, and they come to labor peace through 2026 with a structured salary cap through that time period, which I think teams really enjoy seeing all that structure within the salary cap. There isn't this ominous feeling, this black cloud over an offseason of what is the salary cap going to be? Can we afford X, Y, and Z going into each offseason? So the NHL coming up with that, plus Olympics, their participation in the 2022 and the 2026 Olympics as part of that. I thought that was great news for the NHL, and I don't know why they waited until 6 p.m. on Friday to release all of that. But, again, that's neither here nor there. Hal Gill will be joining us here at 9:15 to go over the start of camp. After Hal Gill, we will get to what Greg Sankey had to say on these very airwaves Saturday morning on ESPN Radio with Marty and McGee, where he offered an ominous feeling about the SEC and college football as a whole and fall sports in college athletics happening in 2020. I feel a lot worse today than maybe I did last Monday at this time about the college football season. We will be getting to that later on in the program. But coming up next, like I said, Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, will be joining us here on the Rundown. The Preds hit the ice for training camp today. The first on-ice action since March 10th. Hallelujah. That's coming up next. Hal Gill here on the Rundown. Ryan Porth and Marquise Munson on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, yes. It is great to hear that music. That means it's essentially Predator season and hockey season starting today. Yes, on July 13th, hockey season is restarting across the National Hockey League. The Preds hit the ice today at noon for their first on-ice action in over 4 months. Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here. It is the Rundown on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we are now joined by Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst here on the program. Skillsy, how the heck are you?
I'm good. I fell off the grid for a little while, and I'm back and ready to go. And this is it's going to be exciting. I hope this takes off. I know the NHL and the PA have worked really hard to make this happen, so I'm optimistic. This is going to be fun.
Well, it seems like the NHL has a ton of protocols in place for the players partaking in, I guess if you want to call it the bubble or the future phase four secure zone, whatever you want to call it. But for you as a former player, how weird would this be for you to A, come back to training camp on July 13th when it's 100 degrees outside and not be able to, say, hug your teammate that you haven't seen in 4 months?
Yeah, this is all bizarre. I don't know if you can look at any of this as normal. Obviously, safety comes first, but at some point you have to get past all the safety and get into being a team and being around your teammates, like you said, and getting in the weight room and working out and getting on the ice and blowing out your legs and doing all the stuff that you – a normal training camp would be. You have to get to it at some point. So, I don't know how all the safety jives with all that. So that's what I'm anxious to see, is how that all works out and the response from the players. I know I'd be kind of squirrely trying to figure out how to keep my teammates safe and how to keep myself safe, but at the same time going out and doing what you do.
Before we get into some specifics with the Nashville Predators, I do want to ask you again, as a former player, we've seen here in the last handful of days players come out and opt out of returning to NHL action because of different reasons, whether it's family reasons or health reasons. Skillsy, if I were to put you in that situation and you were still playing today, how big of a debate would it have been, in your mind, of whether or not to actually come back and play?
Well, it's, I think for everyone, it's different. I think there's certain examples of guys, of players with kids that have heart issues, or, you know, the last thing you want to do is put your family at risk for hockey. So I totally get that. It becomes a decision that really, it's a personal decision that you have to make. Now, that being said, if I was a teammate and one of my teammates decided not to come and there was no reason that I saw, I'd be furious. So, you know, I'm not saying that it has happened and I haven't seen it, but I can imagine there's some guy that is probably fat right now and saying, I can't go and embarrass myself, so I'm just going to pull the plug on this. And that's, it's an easy out to for guys to do that. I haven't seen that, and I hope it doesn't happen. But, you know, it's a personal decision until it affects the team, and then all of a sudden it's a team decision, and it's going to hurt. If you lose a good player because they pull out, it's tough. But that has to, again, that's safety first. That has to happen. So I am all for guys opting out. I think that's a personal decision. But it's tough for the team to handle because all these guys want to play for a cup, and this is their chance. And if ever there's a level playing field, this is it. This doesn't happen very often where everyone's going in with a clean slate. So this would be a lot of fun. But I understand that guys need to opt out.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill with us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hal, speaking of decisions, one of the biggest decisions that John Hines has to make for this Predators team before August 2nd, when the Predators take on the Arizona Coyotes in Game 1 of that qualifying round, is whether to go with Pekka-Rinne or UC Saros between the pipes as his starter. And I think we're going to be debating this for the next 3 weeks up until that Game 1 between the Preds and Coyotes. How do you view that decision for John Hines? And as we sit here today on July 13th, which way would you lean?
I personally, thank God it's not my decision. Personally, I'd be hoping, if I was John Hines, I'd be hoping and praying that these guys make the decision by themselves where one goalie just looks awesome. And I think it's going to be tough, though. I think both these guys, for different reasons, Juice is a young player who wants to come in. He's going to be ready. And, you know, I know Pex well. Pex is not going to just give up this job. He's going to give everything he's got. He's been training. He's been working hard. He has learned to take care of his body better than anyone. He doesn't need a coach around him to tell him what to do to stay in shape. So I know he's going to be ready to go. It's going to be a battle. I think it's tough for goalies to come in, especially when you're looking at back-to-backs. I think you're going to need both goalies. I don't think, you know, you're going to throw goalies in and play back-to-back playoff games, which are intense enough as it is. I think you're going to need to have both of those guys going. And so I think that plays well for the Preds. I really think it's a split decision right now. And what a great opportunity to say, hey, let's just, you know, you go with Tex game one, and then you alternate, and you just go through, and now you have a fresh goalie that you believe in. And that's not too many teams that can say that.
Well, and I brought this up with C-Mace Friday night on Preds Insiders, and that is the Preds could potentially play 33 playoff games, which is essentially close to half a season. You don't get through close to a half a season with only one goaltender. And I would be hard-pressed not only with the Predators, but any team in the qualifying round, if they are to play the maximum amount of games and get all the way to a Stanley Cup final in late September or October, I have a hard time believing they're going to do so with just one goaltender.
Yeah, no, I that's what I mean. It's got to be two. I really think this plays well for the Preds. That's one of the reasons why I think they have a good chance at this is the goaltending, and then, you know, their top six performing. If the top six can come out and perform, I think they'll be way ahead of the game. And that's what I'm looking for, is two goalies going. You know the D are going to bring it. You know your third and fourth lines have brought it all year, and they've been solid. It's just the top six coming, and that puts it all together. And don't forget, John Hines has a chance here for a training camp. That's huge. He's going to set some things in. I know it's going to be focused partially towards the Coyotes, but I think they're looking at a long run, and it's going to be about how they can get, you know, reinforce all the things that Hines has brought to the table in the short time he had, but then building on it. And that's going to be, I think it's going to be a fun training camp for these guys to all feel that out.
Hal Gill with us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hal, considering the margin for error when you come back and play actual hockey on August 2nd is little to none in a best-of-five series. If you were John Hines, would you put the Jofa line together to see if they can rekindle some of that old chemistry with Johansson, Forsberg, and Arvidsson?
Yeah, they certainly know each other. I don't know. I'm anxious to see how all the lines play out. There's so many different ways that he could do it. And don't forget, beginning of last year, the chemistry that Duchesne and Forsberg had was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't let that slide either. There's so many ways. Granlund has really driven lines and been so tenacious. I think it's hard to keep him out of the mix. But Arvidsson, who I really felt was just trying to come back from injury for so long, now assuming he's all healthy and ready to go, I think you're going to see a new Arvidsson. And now, you know, there's a lot of different factors that have to be looked at. I say that about the Preds. Every other team is going through the same thing. So, I think there's got to be – you're looking for that chemistry, but I don't think you rely on it too much. I think you have to wait to see how camp goes. And I heard you guys talking earlier about easing in. I don't know if there's a way you can do that. Honestly, I think – if it was me, I'd want to go in and have some hard practices, short. You don't want to be out there going hard with after 50 minutes where your groins are screaming. But I think these guys have to play at a high pace earlier, sooner rather than later, just so that they can get up to speed. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the challenge. You're looking for chemistry from players, and if you have chemistry when you're going half speed, it means nothing when you're going 100%. And so I think these guys got to get after it, make it short and hard, and try to figure out their chemistry at that level.
Fair point, Hal. Well, last thing for you. Have you allowed yourself to think of what this is going to be like, say, for you and Pete Weber calling games on the radio and not physically being in Edmonton for those games?
Yeah. I'm working with Pete Weber, and if ever there was a way that someone could handle this, I think Pete Weber could look through a keyhole in the top of section 310 and look out and call a game. So I'm not worried about him. Now me, on the other hand, I'm going to have to figure that out. I'm usually a guy that spans the stadium. I want to see the whole thing. I want to see guys trailing the play, and sometimes if you're calling a game off the screen, you're not going to see that. I'm not sure how this is going to work, but I'm looking forward to calling it with Pete, because I know how good he is and how he's going to make this a great experience with whatever he has. So I'm going to follow his lead, and I'm just excited to, you know, don't forget, this is a spectacle of hockey that we've never seen before. Olympics are great, and there's a ton of games, but there's also games against, you know, Canada versus Denmark, and you know they're not all that exciting, and so you load up for really one or two games a day. This is going to be five or six games a day that are going to be unreal. So I mean get your coffee ready and whatever you need, because it's going to be fun. So I'm really looking forward to that, not just being around just the Preds, but the whole spectacle is going to be awesome. So calling that is going to be a lot of fun.
I fully expect there to be many days in August where Hal Gill is sitting on his couch watching hockey starting at 11 a.m. all the way till midnight in his crazy hair that he posted on Twitter.
It did get out of control, but you know, I'm not going to go get a haircut right now. There's too much going on. I'll just let her buck. You know, I get the playoff beard going starting soon, I guess.
I think I would expect how another tweet in the next couple weeks where you're using hashtag sick flow without another haircut.
I'm getting older now. You know, it's like I try to grow the hair out to keep me young.
Hal Gill
is working.
Well, it's working in some ways. Hal Gill is the radio analyst for the Nashville Predators. Hal, thank you as always, and we don't know how this is all going to work out, but just thank God we have hockey back today.
Yes, it's back. Enjoy it while we can.
Absolutely, Hal Gill. Thank you so much for joining us as always. He reacted to something that we had to say, Marquise, in the first segment, which was maybe the Preds easing back in. He doesn't want to see that. He wants to see the Preds get back into action swiftly so that they can be at maximum speed come August 2nd, which, well, I'm not surprised to hear a former player say
that. If you want to do a Stanley Cup count between us and Skillsy, it's zero on this end. So,
and I don't think that number is going to change on this end.
No, absolutely not.
I wouldn't expect it to.
Because I can't even rollerblade, so I doubt they want me to go on the ice and try.
I think I've gone ice skating once in the last 4 years, maybe. I think Amanda and I went ice skating at Centennial once or twice as like a fun Saturday afternoon, and she was ice skating better than me.
That's not surprising.
And I used to play hockey back when I was a kid.
Okay, now that's sad.
It is sad.
But I mean, she's athletic. Right. She's athletic, so
she can hold her own.
She can hold her own. So kudos to that. But no, look, I mean, if he says they should, I agree with him. I mean, of course he's a former player, so I mean, I'm going to agree with a former player's perspective on that. But it'll be intriguing to see, you know, what John Hines and what he does with this team, especially his first practice, knowing that, you know, he finally gets a training camp, just pretty much how he manages this whole thing. Because, hey, this is your opportunity. You get a training camp. You didn't get this when the season started, or when you got hired. So here you go. Let's see what he can do with this. So,
and the players have talked about how valuable that's going to be for them, too, just to have this kind of a time period where, you know, when a coach comes in mid-January, he's catching a moving train. And I understand there have been instances where a coach has come in and that team has taken off and they've won a Stanley Cup. But those are the exceptions and not the rules when it comes to a mid-season coaching change. And when you have 3 weeks of nothing but practice with a new system, that is going to, you would think, bode well for when they actually hit the ice August 2nd compared to when John Hines flies in the night before his first game against Boston, and then they get rolled by the Bruins like 7-3 or 6-3, whatever it was that night. Like, that's just a situation where you're asking for it when you don't have a lot of practice time with your new team. So again, practice today at noon at Bridgestone Arena. Darren Donick and Chase will be there at Bridgestone Arena coming up in 30 minutes. Coming up next, though, is college football delaying the inevitable? We'll get to that coming up next. Ryan Porth and Marquise Munson. It is The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth and Marquise Munson here with you on this Monday morning. Chase McCabe is not present because he is on his way, or he is probably arriving right now at Bridgestone Arena to set up shop for him and Darren McFarland to broadcast live from Bridgestone Arena, the radio booth. Socially distanced, all safe. From the radio booth in the press box upstairs at Bridgestone Arena as the Preds hit the ice at noon. They will have a bird's eye view of the Preds practicing for the first time in over 4 months. And the NHL coming out Friday saying that the qualifying round will start August 1st with Phase 3 starting today with full team training camps. So a lot of good news on the hockey front, but there hasn't been a lot of good news on the college football front. Last week, I believe it was the Ivy League that first came out and said no fall sports for 2020. And a lot of people were like, well, it's the Ivy League. What do they know? And a lot of the same people back in March were saying, it's the Ivy League. What do they know? When they canceled their college basketball tournament before everybody else did. It was about a week before everybody else canceled their own college basketball tournaments because of COVID. when the Ivy League did it. And then everybody's like, oh, I guess the Ivy League is smarter than everybody else. I mean, they probably are when you're talking about Harvard and Yale and Penn and Dartmouth and the other schools in the Ivy League. But the Ivy League coming out last week and saying no college sports in fall 2020. And then the Big Ten comes out and says conference-only games for fall sports, including college football, in 2020. Then the Pac-12 comes out and says that here in the last couple days. And then you have Greg Sankey, commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, going on with Marty and McGee Saturday morning. And this soundbite right here sent shockwaves through the college football world over the weekend of him expressing his concern over the college football season and how COVID is going to impact it.
High to very high. I look at the numbers every day, and the important issue is not just numbers or looking at numbers. It is trying to understand and comprehend, and that's where literally you want experts, you know, moving you away from the scroll or the titles at the bottom of a TV screen or the interviews of this expert or that, and find people out of the public domain who are highly intelligent, highly educated, highly skilled at helping guide information. And we put a medical advisory group together in early April with the question of what do we have to do to get back to activity? And they've been a big part of the conversation. But the direct reality is not good. And the notion that we've politicized medical guidance of distancing and breathing masks and hand sanitization, you know, ventilation and being outside, being careful where you are in buildings. I mean, there's some very clear advice about you can't mitigate and eliminate every risk, but how do you minimize the risk? And we are running out of time to correct and get things right.
That was Greg Sankey on ESPN Radio Saturday morning. And that quote, once it was tweeted out by ESPN Radio, and Greg Sankey doubled down on it on Twitter and, you know, continued to get the message out about how things are not looking good for college football. And when hearing that soundbite, Marquise, I hear him say the direct reality is not good. I hear him say we are running out of time to correct things and get everything under control. And when I hear those things out of one of the most powerful voices in college football, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, there is an immediate black cloud that goes over the college football season, in my opinion, of are we just delaying the inevitable here? The Big Ten coming out, the Pac-12 coming out, saying that it's going to be conference only, and the SEC meeting today, and who knows whether we will learn anything today from that SEC meeting with all the athletic directors of what that means for fall sports in 2020. But are we just delaying the inevitable of college football not taking place in 2020 because of the coronavirus rearing its ugly head once again here in the last couple weeks?
I mean, pretty much. I mean, I don't think any, especially the Power Five schools, I don't think any of them want to play in the spring. That's just, they want to be the ones that say, you know, we're going to make this happen regardless. You know, we're going to get through this. Every other league has done it. You know, every other professional league has done it. So we can do it too. But there's the problem. It's a little bit difficult when you have student athletes on campus with other students, and they're not in a bubble. They're not in Orlando. They're not in Edmonton. They're not in Toronto. They're on the college campuses of Tuscaloosa, Baton Rouge, Fayetteville, Arkansas,
Gainesville, Florida.
It's a lot different when you're mixing in the general population of students in a lot of student-driven cities to student athletes. And that's the difficult part about this whole thing. And that's the whole thing that, you know, people have been ignoring. Like, yeah, we can do conference only and travel within conference. Smart idea. But guess what? Those students still are going to be on campus with other students.
Right.
And then connecting with other players from other schools who are connecting with other students. So it's just a melting pot of things that you have to address if you're college sports. And so that's the reason why a lot of people are just like, I love college football, but I don't know if y'all can do it right now.
Right. And we had a conversation one day last week when I arrived to the office where It was maybe Wednesday or Thursday when I asked you. I was like, are we going to get college football season? And you sounded pretty confident at that time of yeah, we're going to get it. We're going to get it. But it's like with each passing day, there's something comes out with college football that at least for me, and in my opinion only, that makes me think more and more that we are not going to see college football this week.
But you know why I say this, and here's why. I say this, and look, I'm not trying to say that ADs and commissioners of leagues don't care about student health, but let's just be real here. It's all about the dollar bill, y'all. And that's what it's all about to them. So if they can figure out a way to have students on the field, regardless of what's going on in the outside world, they're going to make it happen because guess what? Tuscaloosa needs that money. Fayetteville, Arkansas needs that money. Gainesville needs that money. So they're going to try to figure out. That's why I say it, because I don't think they care whether or not, you know, with the health issues, the health concerns. I'm not going to say they can play, they don't, you know, care 100%, but I think they're more money driven of we have to get this done from a city's perspective, from a campus perspective, the impact that it will have on not only the city of Tuscaloosa or you know, Baton Rouge, but what it's going to do to our smaller school, you know, programs that are at our school, that we may have to drop programs because of this. Because if Alabama football doesn't play, if LSU football doesn't play, you're not going to get a lot of these other, the tennis program and the golf program and all these other programs that we're going to have to defund because we don't have the money to do it. Because guess what? Our biggest money-driven sport, we have to cancel.
Right.
So that's why I say that I'm pretty sure a college football season is going to start. Not because they don't care about the student safety. I'm pretty sure that plays a big part in the decisions that they're going to make around it. But trust me, they want to make sure they get this money for their campus and for their city. So that's why I think it's going to happen.
And I totally agree that that is a vital part of college athletics for these universities to have specifically college football and the financial impact that college football has on college athletics as a whole. But when you take into account just these two examples, here in Nashville, where an SEC university lies with Vanderbilt, where in Nashville, just last week and last week alone, we had the highest number of positive tests since March. And we've also had the highest percentage of tests being positive that we've had since March, where it was 20%. I think they announced Saturday morning that within the previous 24 hours, it was 20% positive test, even though the sheer number wasn't as high as the record number was earlier in the week. And then you take into account Florida, where yesterday they announced over 15,000 positive tests for coronavirus, which is the highest from any state on any single day since March. So those are just two examples where the Florida Gators, right there in the heart of Florida, and Vanderbilt right here in Nashville, where if I'm an AD in the SEC today on this call or in this Zoom meeting, whatever it may be, I don't know how confident you can be that you can say, yes, our student athletes are going to be safe enough to return to practice and actually play games this fall with this recent info that we have. I mean, sitting here a month ago, I think we were all a lot more confident with the return of sports. But it seems like since Memorial Day that a lot of people have ignored the health protocols that were in place for the previous 2.5 months. The coronavirus didn't go anywhere over the 2.5 months, as we didn't go anywhere for those 2.5 months. The coronavirus is still out there. And if you're not wearing your masks out in public, if you aren't obeying the health protocols of, you know, keeping large groups under 20 people or 30 people or 40 people, whatever it is in your region, in your state, if you're not following those guidelines, this is the direct result of everything going on, of people not wearing masks out and about. That is why you see a lot of teams, a lot of big names come out here in the last week. Our station put out images of our guys wearing masks. trying to promote and help get the message out to wear your mask. If you want to see college football, and who knows how the NFL is going to be impacted by this. The NFL seems like a league that is going to power through almost anything. But the coronavirus is not a disease that you can just power through and hope is going to go away. It's not going to just go away on its own until we have a vaccine. And that's not going to get here, you would think, until 2021. So when I hear Greg Sankey's comments from this weekend, and then you also factor in what the Big Ten did last week and the Pac-12 did and what you would think the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC will follow with their own, also going conference only, I can't help but think that they are all just delaying the inevitable, and that at some point next month we're going to have the doomsday scenario of college football not happening. And I hate it. I absolutely hate it. But the way things are going, especially in the South, as it pertains to the Southeastern Conference, I find it hard to believe that even a conference-only schedule can start and finish as they want to.
Yeah, and this is why, like, we need to hear from Mark Emery, because that's the one person that's been quiet this entire time. I've heard every commissioner,
right?
Everybody talk within the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12. I've heard all. We need to hear from Mark Emery, because initially he oversees not only just football, all college athletics, the NCAA in its entirety. And so that's the person that needs to step in and say, hey, we need to come together as a commissioner. Greg Sankey, you come, you know, the Big Ten's commissioner, all the commissioners, let's get together and have a meeting and let's figure this thing out.
This is an example of why college football needs a commissioner.
Yeah, needs a commissioner. I mean, because
all these conferences are just willy-nilly on their own. The Big Ten coming out saying it's conference only, and now putting the other four conferences kind of behind the eight ball of, well, now you're putting pressure on us to go conference only.
Because basically, if you're Greg Sankey, and by hearing his voice, you can tell he's uncomfortable with starting the season. It seems like he's just uncomfortable and thinks that this season is not going to go as planned. That's not to say that the other four Power Five conference leaders feel the same way about that situation. They may be like, well, guess what? No Alabama, no LSU. So, hey, let's just continue to play college football without the SEC this year. And that's a possibility, because you're going to have one commission that says, oh, I don't agree with Greg Sankey. We're going to go on with our season conference only, like we expect it, like we plan. So that's why we need to all get together, all the commissioners, and have a conversation on when this thing could actually happen, or if it could happen.
Now, the Patriot League, again, it's not a huge league or conference, but the Patriot League announcing they will not have fall sports in 2020.
Let's see, though, and we could talk about this on the other side, but those are the leagues that I'm worried about the most in this whole thing.
Let's bring that up on the other side. We'll continue this conversation, plus we will address a statement that an NFL team made this morning on the other side of the rundown. He's Marquise Munson. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the show, The Rundown. Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you. Chase McCabe and Darren McFarland will be live from Bridgestone Arena coming up at the top of the hour from Preds training camp. They hit the ice at noon today. Chase and Darren will have a bird's eye view of said practice. So that should be a lot of fun. Just exciting to have a show within an arena with actual sports going on in front of them. That is exciting in itself. So that's coming up at 10 o'clock with practice coming up at noon. Rundown, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you on this Monday morning. Last segment, Marquise, we were getting into the state of college football and where things are going. And you brought up a valid point of when I brought up the fact that the Patriot League has now come out saying that fall sports have been canceled for 2020, is that the domino effect of this, a lot of the Power Five schools and conferences are going to get most of the headlines, but the ones that are impacted the most, where it's going to hurt the most, is say the Ivy League of fall sports in 2020, the Patriot League. And these schools, we can throw in MTSU and Conference USA and other Conference USA schools and MAC schools and some of the group of five schools that a lot of their budgets are impacted by the fact that they don't get to play the non-conference games or may not be able to get to play the non-conference games. The domino effect is huge within college athletics.
No, absolutely. And that's the heartbreaking thing about it. And I don't want to go to this extreme, here's the worst case scenario that could possibly happen. But when you look at the smaller schools, if a lot of these Power 5 schools who are going to conference-only play, that means you're taking out, for the SEC, four non-conference games. Usually one is in the Power 5. The other three are those smaller conference games. And same thing for the other four conferences. They play three non-conference games, and two of those are usually against opponents that are in those conferences. So if you're taking a Middle Tennessee State or a Louisiana Monroe or whoever, these small schools are going to be impacted by that, because guess what? They're not getting that money.
Right.
And we know that. So now, not only are you not getting that money from, you know, maybe losing to Alabama or Ohio State or any of these other big Power 5 schools, you're losing out on that money, and you're going conference only, which a lot of these conferences don't have that money to begin with. It just affects a lot of other, like, small programs. I'm not going to compare it to, you know, the minor league system in Major League Baseball, where they have to kind of cut that cost, but
it's similar.
But it's close. But I like I said, I didn't want to go to the extreme, and that's why I kind of kept that. But it is very similar to the minor league system,
sure,
in Major League Baseball, which it's like they don't already get a lot of money to begin with, fund wise. So we may have to do something with it.
Well, and let's use that as an example as well. Not only the minor league example, not only with college football, and under the doomsday scenario of there not being a college football season. Let's just operate under that doomsday scenario. We all hope that doesn't happen. But then you are affecting an entire industry of football and the progress that these young athletes are trying to make within their career. And that has a trickle-down effect all the way to high school. High school, you know, if college sports can't happen, I don't know how high school sports can happen, because there are more individuals, more student athletes impacted with high school than there is college. And if you go a full calendar year with no high school football, with no college football, yes, the NFL may go on as planned, but I am very fascinated to know what the domino effect of that is going to be. If you have a senior that can't play high school football and doesn't have an offer from a college football school, but we see it all the time. There are late bloomers where a junior or a senior in high school can have this breakthrough moment in their football career, and they can go on to great things within college or maybe even the NFL. Those high school athletes may not get that opportunity this year.
This is why we encourage people to flatten this curve, because it's affecting people, because you're a high school kid. You know, you obviously want to get into a college. A lot of these smaller conferences are the way you get in. Guess what? That's going to get, you know, postponed or pushed back. And then a lot of kids go to JUCO. And guess what? JUCO's moving to spring, possibly. Mm-hmm. And that could be announced. A lot of kids go the JUCO route, do 2 years there, and then, you know, they start their two-year career at another four-year school. But guess what? A lot of this is a ripple effect of these things that could happen. I don't want to state that, you know, the ultimate extreme of mm-hmm. how college athletics are being affected by this, but it is. And it's being affected more than baseball, and we had our gripes about that. We talked about it every day on the show. NBA and NHL, let's flatten this curve so we can at least focus on the student athletes in college.
Amen to that. Real quick before we send it off to Darren and Chase. At the arena. Statement from the Washington Redskins football team this morning. On July 3rd, we announced the commencement of a thorough review of the team's name. That review has begun in earnest. As part of this process, we want to keep our sponsors, fans, and community apprised of our thinking as we go forward. Today, we are announcing we will be retiring the Redskins name and logo upon completion of this review. That coming out from the Washington Redskins this morning, or should we say the Washington NFL team this morning. And I found it very curious that they listed the sponsors before the fans and the community, considering that the sponsors coming out here in the last couple weeks asking for the Redskins to consider a name change has started the domino effect. of this. But
hey, whatever change we can get, I'll take it. It's all about just getting change, no matter how you get it. So,
long past due on this one.
Absolutely. So I'm glad they're finally changing it.
For
sure. Red Tails, I like it. Go with the Red Tails.
All right. Maybe we can debate tomorrow what their team name should be. But that's all the time we have on the rundown this morning. For Marquise Munson, I'm Ryan Porth. Coming up next, live from Bridgestone Arena, it is Darren Donick and Chase right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.